Good morning. Good to see everybody this morning. Looking forward to the week. We've got Gary Sandusky visiting with us and his wife Diane from Madison, Indiana, and we get to spend the week meditating and thinking through Ecclesiastes together. So we're very thankful for this opportunity. Before we turn it over to Gary, let's take some time and go to God in prayer.
I hope nobody will mind if I get paid for sitting down. I'm probably going to sit down this week and talk to you, and I hope that won't hurt anything. We're going to be looking at the book of Ecclesiastes, so you might open up your Bible there this morning. And to think about this book written by Kohelad, the Ecclesiastes, the phrase is from the ideal of a name, a word which referred to the calling of assemblies. It's the word, matter of fact, in the New Testament for the word ecclesia, which is the church, the assembly, you see. And so here's somebody who we begin in the very beginning by saying was king over Jerusalem, David's son, and we obviously see that has got to be talking about Solomon, it seems. And so here's somebody we're going to read about who lived a long time ago, who seemed to have, God gave him the ability to have great wisdom and great treasures and great insight into things. And so he was blessed with the opportunity. If anybody was going to have the opportunity to taste everything and do everything and try to conceive of everything, here was a man who had wisdom that surpassed everybody else's. And so if he's going to be able to look at life with all he has and tell us what life is about, this man ought to be able to tell us how it really is, because he can do what we can't do. I can't have 1,000 wives, 1,000 women, 700 wives, 300 concubines, and I can't build all the gardens and all the things he has done. And so you might say, well, what does a king who lived a long time ago, who was very rich, who spoke a different language, what does he have to do with me? Well, I think when you see that Ecclesiastes is something that will not ever pass away in its value, it's not like a computer where you have to hit the update button every once in a while and think that something is outdated, because it is up to date every day. And it just helps to see that nothing really has changed. You look at human nature, look at life. Really, when you think about life in general, everything today is just like it was in the days of Solomon. Now, I know you say, well, wait a minute, we've got internet services, and we've got all these automobiles and all sorts of other things. And you think about all those things, really, when you think about the internet service and what's going on, you know, all those things were already here. All we've done is we've uncovered things that have been here all along. They've all been here. We just simply have uncovered them in our time. And we're like everybody's lived before us. We think we're the wisest, smartest people who's ever lived. And you can look back in history and see that's what people, if you had graduated from the University of Florence in 1490, you would have said that the world was flat, and you were the smartest person in the world, and you would have thought that everything was, that you had it all figured out. Well, that's where we think we are. But when we look at this book and see Solomon, as he begins to tell us what he is going to do, what he's going to explain to us so we can learn something about life. I like this illustration an old preacher told me years ago. Some people don't like it. You can discard it if you want to. But I have seen this in other parts of the world where I've gone to India and other places where they make these Persian and tapestries, India and other places, and they'll hang a piece of kind of burlap type stuff up over a scaffold, and they'll have a couple of young boys get up there on the stand, and then there'll be a man who'll get off on a stool like this. He'll sit there and he'll tell those boys, start up there in the top corner, and you in the back, you stick some blue thread through. And so he'll start weaving some blue thread through, and the guy in the front will stick it back to him, and he keeps sticking it back and forth. And so they move over, and they keep going across there. Now, they don't have any idea what they're doing. They have no concept of what this is all about. But the man sitting on the stool is what they call the master weaver. He already has a picture in his mind of what he's going to produce on this tapestry. And so he's just causing these boys every day. They take this little needle and they just think they're sticking a needle through them, that's all. And they're not doing anything. It just seems monotonous and they're not going anywhere. And they just keep doing that over and over till finally, after several days of doing that, they get down and they stand off on the side by the master weaver, and they see this beautiful tapestry, this beautiful picture that they have woven that was in the mind of this designer, you see. Well, really, your life is the same way. God is trying to take your life every day and to weave things into it. Sometimes you may have to face some trouble, some hardship, and you just keep weaving these colors in. You can't see, you can't imagine everything that happens in this life is going to, God's going to turn out for good to those who love God or called according to His purpose. It's hard for you to imagine that. You look and they said, "This just there's no good. There's nothing beneficial that can come from this." Let me tell you, everything that happens can have beneficial effect in your life, one way or the other. And so, what Solomon's going to help us see, as he talks in this book, he's going to tell us what the summary is in the second verse. But listen to what he says in verse 1. "The word of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." Now that may sound like a skeptic. It may sound like a hippie back in the 60s who said, "There's no sense to all this. Stop the world and let me jump off." But that's not what he's saying at all. He's going to help us see as he explains this book what he's talking about. And when he uses this in triplets, he's trying to get us to see, let me tell you, if you think there's something under the sun that gives meaning to life apart from God, you're going to find out you're wasting all of your energy and all of your time. And it's kind of like I read years ago about a man who had had a lot of money and bought this large mountain-type hill. He was going to build a farm on it, and so he got up on the hill and started digging wells. And he dug some wells on the side and went down shallow and dug some wider wells. And he went up on the top and drilled down deep into the mountainside. He had a lot of money. And so he finally found out that there was no water anywhere on that mountain. No water anywhere on it. And so he decided he would just find somebody who would sell it. So this young boy comes along with a shovel and says, "I'm going to buy that mountain. I'm going to dig me a well." And the old man says, after digging 1,000 wells, "It's vanity. It's vain." Now think about an old boy come with a shovel thinking, "Oh, I'm going to really dig something up and find something." Here we are today. We're just our little shovel with our little corner of the world, and we're digging in it. We think we're going to find some meaning and some purpose to God, so we might start pushing God off to the side. You know, there are two kind of atheists. There's the theoretical atheist who says, "Well, I don't believe. My theory is there is no God." And so he lives that way. But then there are practical atheists. They are people who say, "Well, I believe in a God, but by the way we live, we demonstrate, no, we don't really believe in God." When things get upside down and when life comes to trouble and problems and we can't figure things out, we want to turn our back on God. We need to realize God has made it this way, so we will learn that we cannot figure life out. Matter of fact, we can't number all the problems and we can't straighten out all the problems in life, so what should I do in life? The writer's going to tell us over and over, you've got to trust God. Put your life in the hand of God. When some trouble comes, put it in the hand of God and let it alone. Let God take care of it. And so the writer's helping us see here, under the sun, when you live in the world that you're living in, the vanity of vanity, emptiness, transitory, fleeting. You're digging a well with a shovel and there's no water. And you can dig 1,000 wells. You'll find out in this world, there's nothing in the world that gives meaning to life apart from God, no matter what you do. And so the writer says in verse 3, "What profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun?" Now this phrase "under the sun" is used 29 times. On the 3 or 4 or 5 occasions he says upon the earth and under the sun, I think, in some places. But this is just a picture of looking at life horizontally. If we just live this way and look at life this way, life makes no sense at all. And the thing that makes us realize that is think about death. And so the writer's going to keep bringing death into the picture and saying, what sense does it make? Can you imagine that there is no God and no meaning? And really, the monkey is my cousin, you know. I must not be very smart. I've watched some monkeys. If he's my cousin, well, I'll tell you, I'm not very smart at all. If I'm just derived from what he's brought down to me. As a matter of fact, I've left him way behind anyway. But you think about the fact that living in a world and just thinking there's no God and trying to find some meaning and purpose, I don't know how people deal with life that way. I see why people would just want to give up and quit. If there's no meaning and no purpose. But what if there's meaning and purpose and there's a time for everything and everything in your life right now, maybe I may say to you today, what are you doing today? What are you going to do with your life? Where are you going? Well, I want to go to school. And I say, well, what then? So I want to get a good job. I say, well, what then? You say, well, I want to grow up and get married. I said, well, what then? Well, I want to have some children. What then? I want my children to go to college. I said, well, what then? Well, I want them to grow up. I said, what then? Well, he said, well, one day I'm going to die. And I say, what then? You see, the thing we've got to do is think about what, when the period comes in life to death, what then? If there's nothing to it, you've lived a life and it's just vapor. All it was a rat race to the graveyard. Does that make any sense? Does that seem like there's any purpose, any motivation to be excited and to thrill? I think if I believe that, I would just cry all day long. To think that there's nothing to it. A friend of mine told me he went to a funeral one time of an atheist, and he said it was the saddest thing he'd ever seen and never been to. I said, why was that? There wasn't anybody there. He said, no, there was a big crowd there. I said, well, what, did nobody have anything to say? He said, no, people got up and talked good about my friend. I said, what was so sad? He said, my friend was all dressed up and nowhere to go. Well, you see, that's what the atheist thinks. There's no place to go. There's nothing. And the writer's showing us here, as we look at this, that what he's asking the question, what is the benefit? What is the purpose? What's the meaning? What gives meaning to living? How can you find out what life is about and then pursue it and realize that everything is beautiful in its season? And everything has purpose. And everything means something to God. And if you see that as you look at this book, and notice the writer goes on to show us, if we look at life, it doesn't seem that way. Listen to verse 4. He says, one generation passeth away, another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The sun also ariseth and goeth down, and hasteneth to the place where he arose. The wind goeth toward the south and turneth about toward the north. It whirleth about continually. And the wind returneth again according to its circuits. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. For the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear with hearing. The thing that hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun. And so when you think about what we're looking at here, what we see is that the writer is trying to get us to say, when you look at life, it looks like it's just a monotonous cycle, you see. The sun keeps coming up and the wind blows. You know, the earth turns on its axis. And so what happens in the wintertime is the wind blows down out of the north. We get cold snow from Canada. And then we turn around and go on the axis the other way. And then the hot air comes up from Mexico and we get that, you see. So you can just tell, you don't have to watch the weather, man, know what's going to happen. Just realize it's that time of year, so it's going to rain a lot, or it's going to be dry, or it's going to snow, or whatever. And so you look at all this, and you know what? I've drank water out of the Nile River in Ethiopia. I came back to the States, and I drank some of that same water out of my tap living in my house. See, that earth water just keeps going up, coming down, running down the river, running down the ocean. Sun draws it up, just keeps going. And so you go around the world, you probably drank the same water 3 or 4 times. You don't realize it. But it just keeps going on through the same process, going through the purifying system of coming back into the world. And so it looks like, well, that just looks like there's no meaning to it. And one generation comes, and then another one goes away, and another one comes. And so it looks like when you see that it's just some kind of a constant cycle going nowhere. And actually, that is not the case at all. And you can look at yourself and see, if that's the case, why don't you, after you go into the grave, come back out and start again over here again and come back again? You don't do that. You are not going in some cycle and some cylinder process of where nothing has any meaning. You are on a vertical line going somewhere, and one day the period you'll be in the line, you're going to die. And so what you have done through that period of time and how you have lived is critical in every way to thinking about God and everything you do. And that God has given you all these things, and God has planned all this, and God is sovereign over all of it. And so what you need to do is always think about, you know, this is a mess today. I tell people, God has gotten me out of so many messes. I've made so many messes in my life. I tell folks I've been addicted to drugs, alcohol, pornography, and to tobacco. I've been addicted to those 4 things. But I'll tell you what, I'm free from them today. I'm not struggling with those today. And I tell you who got me. I have been in the mouth of the lion. I tell people I was in Zimbabwe several years ago, went into a place and somebody said there were some lions that came around and sat on this rock. Said, you want to go out there and sit? They'll come up there in the morning and sit on that rock and sit among these 2 lion cubs. And I went up there and said, yeah, I'd like to just see that one time. I went up there and sat down. And the man said, well, if they come up by you, don't reach your arm out because they'll grab hold of your arm and you may not get it back. So I was sitting there, and this one lion came up and sat right up close to me. I started sweating. And then I saw another lion coming up out of the bushes. And so I said, hey, look over there. And when I did that lion took his teeth went all the way over the front of my arm. And I was saying, the man said, don't jerk your arm, he'll take it off. Well, I've learned years ago when you get dog bit or something, always push toward the mouth of something and choke it so it'll let go. So I just started pushing back toward his mouth, and he let me go, see. And I put my arm down, and I slowly got up and got away from there. I've been in the mouth of a lion one time. I'm not going back. And I tell you, sin's the same way. Sin is like a monster. It wants to eat you. And you think, I'll dabble at it. I'll just nibble at pornography. I'll drink a little bit. I might smoke a little bit or do a little bit. And you think you can do it. You can't do it. Sin is like an addictive drug. When you start dabbling at it, you're going to fall headlong into it. And so the writer's going to help us see, as we look at this picture of where we're going, he helps us to see in the very beginning that what we need to learn about life is all things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. And so we're never satisfied. The eye, you know, I've looked at Niagara Falls. I've looked at Victoria Falls. It's a mile-long waterfall. And I have seen amazing things in the world. And I tell you what, I always want to see something else. Have you ever noticed that? I keep traveling around the world seeing new things all the time. I just can't seem to see enough. I'm not satisfied with seeing. And I tell you, I've heard a lot of great... I've heard Marty Robbins sing, My Woman, My Woman, My Wife. And I've heard Marty Robbins sing a lot of great songs. But I tell you what, I got that old tape. When I go overseas every year, I take it with me. I listen to it over. I put on my iPod now. I listen to Marty Robbins on my iPod. But you see, you just keep wanting to hear more and learn more. And you just learn that whatever you do in life, you're never satisfied. Can you see that? You might say, well, I'll buy a new car or I'll buy this house and I'll never want another house. It amazes me how when my wife and I go into some house, move in there, and we say, oh, this is so wonderful. And she's so happy. After a while, I say, you know, what if we ought to move somewhere else? And I said, well, maybe we ought to. But I said, you know, we got this one paid for. Why don't we just be satisfied with it and just let that take care of us? And so we learn, if you can learn to be content with life, and this first chapter really shows us, don't try to gobble life. Don't try to go out and just consume everything in life. Learn to sip at life. Learn to enjoy what you've got. You might say, well, I'd like to go out today and eat a steak dinner for lunch, but you don't have the money, so you've got to go home and eat some bean soup. And you sit down at the table and you start eating bean soup and you heard Brother So-and-so saying, well, we're going to a steakhouse. So you sit there, oh, I wish I had to eat me a steak. You just make your bean soup more water. That's all you're going to do. And so enjoy your bean soup, you see. Everything you've got, just be satisfied. Just let the simplest things satisfy you. I've learned to tell people, and they say, how would you like to have this? I said, that's just the way I like mine. I don't care. There's only two things I really don't like. Goat brains and hot buffalo milk. That's the only two things I don't like. So if you want to serve that for supper, you might cancel me out. But here's a picture of people learning in life. You just can't, there's nothing here that will satisfy you. So you think, oh, if I just get this job or get this or make this much money, no, you won't. It won't happen. And so the writer says to us in the next verse, in verse 9, the things which have been, it is that which has, which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There's no new thing. Now, you think about human nature. You think about life. You look about Solomon's day. What was going on Solomon's day? The same thing's going on today. Now, I know there were different conditions of things, and we think we're the smartest people. Will you tell me how they built Stonehenge? Have you ever been to Stonehenge? How'd they do that? You tell me how they did it. You see, we think we're the smartest. How in the world did they build the pyramids? How did they embody people and their body lasts so long? How did they do all that? See, we think we're the smartest people. Let me tell you, smart people have been here a long time before us. And we think, well, now we have arrived now, and we've figured it out, so we don't need God anymore. We're the smart people now. Well, that's what every generation's thought. But the writer says to us in verse 10, is there anything whereof it may be said, this is new? It hath already been of old, which was before us. And so, as I said, even discoveries, you know, things that men discover, they simply are uncovering and realizing what has already been here. We've just done what God designed in the chemistry and in the physics of life and all that God made in the world. We're discovering things that God made in the very beginning. In the first 6 days of creation, we spent a long time learning what God, the amazement, and it's hard to tell where we're going next. I mean, we're figuring out things. I mean, you buy something, a computer, it doesn't take long. You've got to throw the thing away. It's not good. You've got to update. You've got to have something new. And so everything is changing. So my grandpa didn't think people had ever gone to the moon. He said, that's a big bunch of baloney. Nobody's ever going to go to the moon. I mean, that's how far it's come since my grandpa was living, you see. And if he were to see a cell phone today, well, he'd jump through hoops all day long. What in the world has happened to the world? And so we've come a long way. But I'm going to tell you, if we ever leave God behind, we have left it all behind. And so the writer says to us in the next verse, in verse 11, there is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of all that are come with those that shall come after. And so you know what we learn about mistakes we make and other, we forget things. We think we learn from history, but we seem to be determined to just go back and repeat it. We do the same things, go through this process, we go back and we start again, and we forget what people learned before. So rather than learning and remembering, and besides that, if you think you're going to be famous and make some big name, in 150 years after you're gone, nobody will know. You know, if you wait 40 years and come in here in this building and say, "Hey, remember old Gary Sandusky held a meeting here? It's like Gary Sandusky. Who's that? Never heard of him?" You see, that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be forgotten. So don't think, "Oh, I'm going to leave a big dent in the world." Old preacher told me one time. He said, "You want to know what kind of a dent you're going to leave in the world? Stick your hand in a bucket of water and pull it out and see how big a hole there is in the water. That's how big a dent you're going to leave." And so if we could see, the writer then tells us what he's going to do here in verse 12 when he says, "I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I gave my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given the sons of men to be exercised therewith." And notice, he's trying to figure out, now, what is it about? I'm going to search out life. I'm going to investigate life. I'm going to see what life is about. So I'm going to find out what the purpose of life is and what should I be doing to give life real meaning. And he says, you know what? God has given us this sore travail. We all keep searching. We all keep trying to figure out. We think, oh, there's some meaning. I'll just get this degree, or I'll get this job, or I'll marry this person, or I'll do this or do that. And we just think that's what it's all about, and we need to learn. No, we're going to figure out as we keep going, that's not what it's about at all. And so the writer's helping us see here, as we exercise ourselves in this process, verse 14, "I have seen all the work that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of spirit." This phrase, vexation of spirit, is the idea of chasing after the wind. I tell people when I was a young boy in school, I must have been nutty. I don't know what was wrong with me. But there was these three walls out behind the back of the school, Charles D. Jacob Grade School. And in the fall of the year, the wind would get to whirling around in it. It would start going like a little tornado in between those three walls, and leaves would be in there. And so it would start whirling around. And when the kids would see that, they'd say, Gary, go chase the wind." Well, I was a nut. I'd run in there, and I'd run around in those leaves. And I was trying to catch the wind, and I'd be grabbing at it. And after a while, it would settle down, or I'd run out of breath, and I would sit down. And I thought, what am I doing? I've just got dirt in my eyes and nothing in my hands. I'm going to tell you, if you chase the wind in life, what if I could have caught the wind, think about this, and put it in a jar, put a lid on it, and opened it up? Would it have been wind in the jar? You see, all you would have captured is air. You can't catch anything. You can't harness the wind. And so you can't harness life. You can't find the purpose of meaning under the sun with whatever you do unless you see that God is what gives it meaning. And when you do that, it changes your perspective about everything. The way you live, the way you treat people, the way you talk, the way you work, the way you treat your children, treat your husband and your wife, what kind of a citizen you are. Everything about your life is changed because of this one perspective that there's a God who's given you life and given you opportunity and blessed you with all these gifts. So verse 15 says, "That which is crooked cannot be straightened, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered." So here's the picture. When you look at life, you know what? Life can frustrate you. And you can look at all the crooked, all the things that are perverse, all things that are wrong. If I were to start and say, "Okay, brother, I want you to tell me all things you know in the world that are unjust and unfair. Let me write that down." So he gives me about 10 or 15. I go over to these young fellows, and they tell me something about what's going on. And we go around the room, and I start making this list up, and I get over here to the end of this side of the room, and I write down what this lady over here on the end has to say. And so then I say, "Okay, now we got this." So no, I heard all that. I got some more now. So we start adding more problems, more things that are perverse in the world, things that aggravate you and frustrate you. You know what you're going to find out? We can't begin to even number the problems in the world. And not only can you not number the problems, but let me tell you, you can't straighten them out. So don't let life frustrate you. Don't let your kids drive you over the edge of the wall. Don't let your marriage, don't let your boss on the job, don't let some brother in the church drive you crazy. Just say, well, I see what Ecclesiastes is about. This is the way life is, you see. It's working the way Ecclesiastes says. I can't straighten people out. My mom called me 20 times, I know, yesterday. She's complaining about her neighbors, complaining about people she knows, and all these things are bothering. I said, that's the way life is. You just have to realize that's how life is. And so she'll hang up, and she'll wait about 20 minutes. She'll come, let me tell you what else. And so she starts in again with something. And I didn't count. I'd say at least 20 times she called me and did that. She said, what are you doing? Every time I said, Mom, I'm studying the book of Ecclesiastes. I wish you'd get your Bible down. I wish you'd read Ecclesiastes. She said, well, I tell you, when you get finished studying, you call me and tell me what it's all about. See, she wants me to solve her problem. I can't solve your problem for you. I can't get you to figure it out. You've got to read the book of Ecclesiastes yourself. My grandmother said when I was little, I can't learn you anything. Well, she wasn't proper in English. But I'm going to tell you what, she can't learn me anything. I've got to learn it myself, you see. She could have taught me, but I've got to make up my mind. So if you learn anything this week because you want to learn it and you want to see it, and so you're going to dive in and start reading some of this and see, hey, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm glad to know that. I'm going to quit wasting my life chasing in the rat race of life. Just running in a rat race, trying to keep up with the Joneses, you know. And when you think about under the sun, you think about what Jesus said in the 16th chapter of Matthew about a person who will give his life if he gained the whole world. What's Jesus talking about? He's talking about living under the sun, life upon the earth. If you give your life, you've got something in your possession that is eternal, and it's worth more than everything in the world. If you gain everything in the world, have all of it, and I'm not talking just part of it, if you could own all of it, and then if the cash register died today and punched the button at the grave and say, okay, how much do I get? You'd have a big zero. You didn't get anything because you threw away the one thing that was the treasure. You threw your soul away. You need to see that you are created in the image of God. And everything you do in a world that is fallen by sin and marred by sin, in Romans 8 and verse 20, it's subjected to vanity. Why? Not because of reason that it wanted to, but because of what happened in the world. When sin came into the world, we're living in a world where sin, we're going to go on and see in this book that the world is full of crazy people. Oh, you get crazy people running down the highway and driving to Walmart and going places. You're going to see all kind of crazy things happen. So that's why it's the way it is. And so it's marred by sin, you see. And so the writer says to us, since we can't straighten it out, let's don't worry about it. Let's don't let it frustrate us. We can't straighten the world out. So don't let that bother you. Just keep on living and you be content where you are. Verse 16 says, I commune with my heart saying, lo, I have come to great estate and have gotten more wisdom than all that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart hath great experience and wisdom and knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. So he says, you know what I thought first of all? I'll tell you what life's about. Get your PhD. A friend of mine lived across the road up in Boston from a man who worked in NASA, who worked on the space shuttle. This man was a genius. And he moved up to Boston and a big fine mansion up there. And my neighbor said, the first time it snowed on this old boy, he lived in Florida all his life. First time it snowed on him, he looked out the door, and this old boy had a dustpan on his driveway. He was bent over with a dustpan, scraping his driveway off. Now, I'm not trying to insult anybody that's educated, but I'm just saying, you might think a PhD is what you need. You might get a PhD and scrape your driveway with a dustpan if you're not careful, you see. Let me tell you, you might think that education, if you go to school, good for you. I'm going to tell you, Ecclesiastes 9 verse 10 says, wet the edge before you cut the wood. I hope I've got that right. It might be 10:10. But the point is, when you start in life, young people, get smart. Use your mind. Listen to your Bible. Memorize your Bible. Learn your Bible. Now go to school. Because I'm going to tell you, if you get wise with human wisdom, it will make your life easier. But I'm going to tell you, human wisdom is not the answer to life. All the things you can learn, there's no end to it. All the books that have been written, you can read and read all. Have you ever gone into a library and seen what's there and think what little fraction? You may have read a lot of books, but what a fraction you know of what's in the world. So don't think that, well, if I get my PhD, well, now I've arrived. That's what, you got to get that. I'm going to tell you, if you get your PhD, make sure you make A's all the way. Do your best. Work hard at everything you do. Don't goof off at anything. Don't be lazy. Whatever you do in life, if you want to be happy, it's the labor of doing what you do. We're going to see that here in the second chapter in a little bit. But it's the process of going through the labor of getting a PhD that will give you joy. Once you get it and hang the thing on the wall, it won't mean much to you anymore. But the joy you got and ability and the experience of your mind and what you learn and what you can use in life, you know what? When you get in trouble, you know what you're going to want when you get into trouble? You're going to want wisdom to solve your problem. That's what you're going to want. Knowledge won't sometimes solve a problem. Understanding, comprehending the problem, you may comprehend it, but you may not have the wisdom to solve it. Wisdom will help you solve the problem. So when you get in a mess in your life, I'll tell you what you're going to wish. You're going to wish I had the wisdom to figure out how to solve this. Not just to, some people look at a problem, and they know it's a problem. They have the knowledge to know that, but they don't understand what the problem's about. They can't figure it out, and they don't have the wisdom to solve it. So the problem remains in their life their whole life because they never become wise. Somebody said, wisdom is just really common sense in a lot of ways. And the only problem with common sense nowadays is it's not very common. People don't have it. That's the trouble with it. And so if we can go back to this common sense here and see what God is telling us about the way life really is and learn that if we think that wisdom is what it's about, and so Solomon says, I'm going to get out here. I said Solomon, some people don't believe he's the writer. And if you disagree, I'm not going to have any issue with that about anybody, about Kohelet being just a preacher. We don't know who he was. And so some people believe that, and that's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I'm just saying that's what I think about it. And so he says when he got this great experience and this knowledge, and in verse 17 says, I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness. Solomon said, I'm going to see, is it knowledge or is it just craziness? You know, maybe it's in craziness. Maybe it's in folly. Maybe it's in foolishness. Maybe I'll just see what it's like to be a fool. Figure that out, you know. And maybe that's what's about it. So I perceive this also is chasing after the wind. So he did all that work. He got all of it. And when he had gotten his PhD, he said, well, that's not what life's about. Now, he was glad he'd done the work and got the labor and the benefit of what he did. But he realized that is not getting a PhD is not going to give life meaning to you. That's not what life is about. And so then he says to us in verse 18, for in much wisdom is much grief. He that increaseth in increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Now think about what that says to us for a minute or two. When you look at what we have learned today, you talk, if we were to talk to young people this morning, talk to a class of 5 and 6 year old kids and say, have you thought about what's going to happen? And the economy in this country is in such a mess. And if you don't do something while you're young, start thinking about your economy and putting some money back and doing something, you're going to be in terrible trouble. And that young person said, what in the world is economy? What is that person talking about? Well, that doesn't bother them because they don't know anything about it. But when they start going to school, start going to college, and have to bounce their budget every week on how they can eat bologna on Friday, what they're living on in college, and how to go through all the process to unravel, and they begin to see what the financial condition and the way things are, they're going to start worrying about it. They're going to start being grieved by it. Einstein, when he learned to split the atom, I mean, you think about the mind. The only thing Einstein had in trouble is I comb my hair the same way he does. But when you think about Einstein, splitting the atom and the marvel and the ingenious of what it, a mind, I'm sure he wouldn't have had any time to waste to talk to somebody like me. Somebody that smart who had such insight into the physics of what goes on and what makes things the way they are. But yet when he found out how to split the atom, you know what it's caused the world? You know what we're worried about today? Somebody's going to drop one of them bombs on us that splits the atom, and we're going to have a nuclear blast somewhere, an atomic blast, and we're going to be in trouble from the fallout of that, you see. So now here's this great discovery This man with great insight and great wisdom has uncovered something wonderful. And you think about all the things that have changed life. Men thought they knew everything until X-ray was invented. And when they got the X-ray machine going and started looking, they thought, we don't know anything about it. So we started realizing we've been ignorant all this time about all these things. And then when Aristotle designed the telescope, we thought we knew. And when he designed that, you remember what he said? He said there are about 3,000 stars out there. He came along and invented this glass where he could look at the stars and count the stars, and he missed it by billions and billions and billions of stars. But when we began to look out into outer space, you know, we thought when we go to the moon, oh, we're going to really know. We're going to really learn something about it. We get to the moon, you know, that Russian satellite went out to the moon and come back. Well, I'll tell you Americans something. I went to the moon and come back, and I didn't see God anywhere. Well, oh, boy, you should have seen God before you left the earth. You should have seen what's around you, you see. But I want you to think about all the discoveries and all the things that we learn in the world. What they end up doing is making us realize we really don't know very much. We're learning more and more all the time. We're seeing the wisdom of God in the designing of the world and the foundations that He laid and the doors and the bars that held the ocean the gates that held the oceans back. And the dividing of all these land masses and nations and people and languages and tongues. And so what we're seeing is the wisdom of God in everything we look at. And so Solomon is going to help us to see, I think 39 times, if I may have missed that, God is mentioned. And so over and over he's saying, if you look at life and you build your life by looking at what you see and what you can touch and what you can taste, and you live by just like an animal, man doesn't live by bread alone. Animals live by bread alone. Man lives by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So what you do is you're building a picture of life, but you have left the top off of it. It's about like somebody designing a Rolex watch. One of my friends, Ken Green, we were in Hong Kong, and his watch quit working, and we went out on the street, and this old boy was selling watches, this guy had a Rolex watch for $12, and it said genuine imitation on the front of it. So Ken bought that genuine imitation Rolex watch and for $12, and he went to bed tonight, woke up next morning, it wouldn't run. And so we went back to find the old boy. Well, his shop had moved a long way from where he was. But you think about somebody having a Rolex watch and the marvel of how it can keep the seconds. Here we're spinning around every 24 hours. I don't have to adjust my watch every day. And this is not a Rolex. The world is spinning around, and it's in such accuracy with such pattern design in 24 hours, 2,500 miles around. We're moving pretty fast, old buddy, to go around like that, 2,500 miles in 24 hours. And then we're going around this way. And the energy and the power that's making all that happen, it may look like it's just a vicious cycle of nothing. Can you imagine what it would take the kind of power plant to just spin the earth around one time? If we had to do that? Or what it would take to water the earth with a garden hose and the pumps and the water to get that job done? God does it every day. But when you look at all these things and you see all this, it should make you realize there is some kind of designer, some kind of order. Something is behind. This just could not. I've seen a lot of I was in explosive training in the military. I've seen a lot of explosions. I've never seen any order ever come from an explosion. It just does not make any sense at all. And so to leave God out, maybe even if you're a Christian, and like I say, you could be a practical atheist. You could say, well, I believe in God, but you don't really do what God says. You don't believe what the Bible says. You're just living your life, and you come to church, and you think there's a God in heaven, but you're not doing what He says. That's a practical atheist. You just don't really. You've got to do what God says. You've got to believe God, you see. So this writer is going to help us to look at life in that sort of a way and to get a picture of it so that when we get involved in life, we won't chase after the wind. You're going to get to the end of life like a lot of people have and just have dirt in your eyes and nothing in your hands if you chase after life. Don't chase life. Live life. Enjoy every day. Enjoy everything. Enjoy your bean soup. Enjoy your old 1962 Volkswagen, if that's what you come to church in. Enjoy whatever. If you came in a horse cart, enjoy that. Whatever you've got, see the good in everything you have and enjoy it, no matter how things go. Does anybody have any comments or corrections? I make a lot of mistakes. Anybody want to make any corrections about what I said? Anybody have any comments at all? Well, I'm going to quit and let y'all have a break. So let's stop there. Thank you very much.